You're listening to the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Each week, you'll hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Americans for Truth Hour will help you to stay informed and engaged on the side of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with us as we work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. And now, here's Peter LaBarbera.
Well, welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. We're in the third part of our four-part interview with Mike Brown, Dr. Michael Brown. And Mike, are you on the line?
I'm right here, Peter. Thank you.
Well, I know it's not going to rank among your highest honors, but you should know that we only do four-part interviews with our most interesting guests.
Well, I'm blessed to be part of that. Maybe we'll break the record one day.
Anyways, we've been talking to Mike Brown, who's really got a tremendous life story. He is I guess at one time you called people like yourself converted Jews. Is that passé, Mike?
Well, it was never something that was a positive way to say it, because it gave the impression that being a Jew was a sin,
right,
or that you were no longer a Jew. So when I came to faith, I was a Jewish believer in Jesus. People said, "You're a completed Jew." And when I talked to rabbis and said, "I'm a completed Jew," they were offended by that. And we said, "Well, we're Jewish Christians," but then that sounded like an oxymoron. So the term that's really worked well for years is Messianic Jews, because we're Jews who embrace Jesus as the Messiah. And converted sinners now following Jesus as Jews. And, you know, that, hey, in the early church, the controversy was, could you be a Gentile and follow Jesus without becoming Jewish? And then it shifted through the centuries that in order to follow Jesus, you had to leave your Jewishness behind. Thankfully, the church has made some good adjustments on that in recent decades.
Yeah, I remember seeing once when I was a new believer, a bumper sticker or a shirt that said Jesus was black. And, of course, we all know that that the paintings have Jesus and the you know, his family is lily white. But the reality is, I think Jesus was tan.
Yeah, Billy Graham once said to a mixed audience, to the black people, he said he was lighter than you. To the white people, he said he was darker than you. I mean, he was a Middle Eastern Jew is what he was. You look at a lot of the Arab world today or an Israeli that's born in Israel, that would have been more what he looked like.
And Mike, you know, it must be interesting for Jewish people first reading the New Testament. Because I remember when I was a new believer and I was reading the Bible seriously for the first time, and you know, so much jumps out at you, but when you read it, the more you read it, I mean, you can't believe that people wouldn't see the Jewishness of it. It's all about Jews. You know, you can't believe that people would, how it evolved or how it came to be that people came to hate Jews and use Christianity to persecute Jews.
Yeah, it really is a remarkable perversion. And you have to realize that a lot of the conflicts that take place are in-house conflicts. Just like when the prophets were renouncing their own people, they did it as ones who loved their people and were given to their people by life or death. So the New Testament is recounting conflicts and issues, but it's in-house. It's you know, the idea that Saul was persecuting Christians, and then he got saved and converted and became a Christian and changed his name to Paul, is completely bogus. His names would have been Saul Paul from birth, Shaul and Paulus, because he was a Jew but born in Tarsus, so he'd have a Greek name and a Hebrew name. And he was not persecuting Christians. There was no such concept at that point. That comes a little bit later in history, Acts 11. This is Acts 9. Saul, who is also Paul, is persecuting fellow Jews who believe that Jesus, Yeshua, is the Messiah. And then he has a radical encounter with Yeshua. He himself becomes a radical follower of the Messiah as a Jew, and continues as Saul, the Jew. And then when he's sent on his Gentile mission, his name Paul goes to the forefront. So it wasn't joining a new religion. It was as a Jew embracing Jesus. And there have been rabbis who've come to faith through the years, and that's been one of the amazing things. They read the New Testament and were in a state of shock as to how incredibly Jewish it was, not just in the material, but in the thought process, the history, the connection. It's undeniable, and we trust more and more Jews will be coming to faith in the coming years.
Well, Mike, you are a guy who really shies away from conflict. You know, not it wasn't enough to take on some of the leading rabbis of our time, apologists for sort of a Christ rejecting Judaism. But now you've taken on the homosexual issue just because you got involved in it, which is commendable in and of itself. But the book you've written, and I'm about I'd say I'm maybe a third of the way through, Mike, and it really is an amazing story. Today we're going to be talking about the chapter that Mike wrote called Chapter 10, Queer Theology, a Gay Lesbian Bible, and a Homoerotic Christ. And I should warn people listening tonight, or if they listen on the online, this is going to be very offensive stuff, some of the things we're going to take out of Mike's book and have him discuss, because it really blasphemes our Savior, Jesus Christ, whom we obviously revere and love and want to be as much as like as possible. And yet, I was stunned reading some of this stuff, Mike. But before we go on, let's give the proper introductions. Mike Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience, which is describe that for us, Mike, based in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, it's a network of Christian leaders and believers working together for moral and cultural change through the gospel. We just believe that not by taking over and enforcing our views or trying to make everyone follow our views, but by being salt and light, by being a moral conscience, that we're supposed to bring change to society, and in the midst of society going in the wrong direction, to be a voice speaking into that so that society is held accountable.
Right. Now, and your website is askdrbrown.org. You've got a radio show which is growing in popularity. It can be heard across the country. How many states can that be heard in, Mike?
Well, it can be heard all over the country. We're in combined a couple hundred different stations, including the weekends. But we're in probably 20 or 30 states live every day, and folks can get all the details, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. They can also listen 2 hours live online as well and hear the broadcast in real time.
That is at askdrbrown.org?
Yes, sir. Click on the Line of Fire on that website, and that gives them all the radio information.
Yeah, and I've got a backlog of shows I've got to hear once I was on the website. And Mike is also the author of a new book. He's written 20 books. Is that right, Mike, 20?
Yes, sir.
That's 20 more than I've written, Mike, so thanks a lot. I'm feeling really dumb right now. But a queer thing happened to America, and what a long, strange trip it's been. And this is all about the progression of homosexual activism in our country, with a lot of feeling about the proper biblical approach. In other words, we don't hate people. We want to reach out with the gospel that has saved so many homosexuals, Jesus has pulled people out of that lifestyle. People have changed their lifestyle. But the book is mainly about this incredible agenda, Mike. Is that accurate?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Look, I embrace the full humanity of every human being. Whether they say they're straight, whether they say they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, they are a fellow human being created in God's image. They are a fellow human being for whom Jesus died. And I embrace their full humanity and their full rights as fellow citizens. And I absolutely oppose the goals of gay activism at the same time. I oppose the transforming of our culture that supports the normalizing of homosexuality and transgenderism. I oppose the indoctrinating of our kids with these things in our schools. I oppose the rewriting of the Bible. I oppose the removal of religious freedoms and freedoms of conscience so that we bow down to sexual orientation as a category the same way that we would recognize skin color in a distinct way, that now this becomes a distinct social class that has special rights and benefits. I oppose that. Well, at the same time, embracing fellow human beings as fellow human beings, but special rights agenda, I absolutely oppose.
Yeah, and I think you really do a great job of walking a fine line. And we're going to be talking probably mostly in our fourth interview about some of the leftist. I'm calling them leftist evangelicals, Mike. I don't know if that's accurate. Leftish, maybe liberal evangelicals who are moving to a position of what I call. I think it's nicer than Jesus. It's a lot of love without truth. What I respect about you is you earnestly seek to love your enemies, love people into the kingdom of God. You obviously care for people, and yet you haven't compromised on the I'm always botching your thing. Resist. What's your phrase?
Reach out and resist. Reach out to the people with compassion.
That's right.
Resist the agenda with courage.
Well, and you do resist, and you've written this incredible book, which documents the agenda, and that's what I see as the main problem of modern evangelicalism. I think they want out of the culture war. They don't like the culture war. They don't like the confrontation. They rationalize pulling out by saying, "Hey, this is going to harm my outreach to gay people, to people in the lifestyle. I can't do that. I can't resist the homosexual agenda because it's going to hurt my outreach." But you're not doing that. You're walking that fine line.
Well, you know, in point of fact, when I started to get concerned about the activist agenda, my heart started to break for the people. My burden for homosexual men and women, my love for those who identify as LGBT is 100 times more intense than it was 7-8 years ago. Reading their stories, hearing things they've gone through, seeing how they perceive people like me has just heightened my love for them. Sitting long plane rides, having people tell me their stories and what's going on in their lives, or sitting next to a lesbian lady and she's talking about raising her daughter, or a gay guy that's talking about how his family put him out. That's drawn me closer to the people. And in fact, we have helped mobilize a lot of prayer. And I've been in many prayer meetings now where the whole focus is praying for the salvation of the homosexual community, praying for the gospel to penetrate. I've never seen this much prayer and this much focus of people who say, we want to go and reach them and wash their feet and bring the gospel to them at the very same time that we oppose the agenda. And I'm very concerned, Peter, that if we depart from one biblical standard in terms of our role as salt and light and being a moral conscience in society, if we depart from that the next thing we'll depart from is effective outreach. And I know we'll get into that in our fourth and final segment or broadcast together. But I think it's important that people realize it's a spirit of compromise that's come in, and that ultimately that's going to affect our very biblical moral values themselves.
Absolutely. We're talking to Mike Brown. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, everybody, to the Americans for Truth Hour. I'm Pete LaBarber, president of Americans for Truth about homosexuality. Our website is aftah.org or americansfortruth.com.org. We've got a lot of URLs, but they all go to the same website. And we are a single-issue organization devoted to opposing the homosexual activist movement. And we, like Mike, we highlight the stories of people who've come out of the lifestyle. And Mike, I'm looking on your book here as I was reading the chapter and about the mistreatment of homosexuals, the idea that some people treating homosexuals as if they're lepers. I don't see a lot of that, but I suppose there are people who really do hate homosexuals who would be afraid to be near them or et cetera. But I see the bigger problem these days is that society, not just Christians, but society just doesn't really care anymore. And I want to tell you about what I saw last week. I read an article in the Chicago Sun-Times, found out that the University of Chicago was holding an exhibit called The Leather Library, which was all about sadomasochism. This was paid for with a student fund, $3,000 of university money. And I learned subsequently that the University of Chicago, this very esteemed university in the city of Chicago, has an S&M, an official student group devoted to students who want to practice the bondage discipline, the sadomasochistic lifestyle. Can you believe that, Mike?
Yeah, I can believe it, and I document some similar things in the chapter on campus life in A Queer Thing Happened to America. In fact, if you have the book in front of you, if you go to page 562 in A Queer Thing Happened to America, there's a full-page picture. We had to pay to get the rights to use it. It was from the Village Voice, and they had a feature article about born gay, queer in the crib. And there's a picture of a leather boy. There's a picture of a little boy. They've got him dressed up in leather. He's got a whip. He's got handcuffs on. And, obviously the picture was meant, to be some cute thing in the Village Voice. But the thought that could be cute, I mean, the leather thing, that's sadomasochism. And you've got a little boy in that outfit it's crazy. The crazier thing is, as you say, people are like, oh, so what's the big deal?
Well, it's like total.
That's one of the things we talk about in the book.
It's the total depravity, Mike. Yeah, the trajectory is. It seems like once you take down the boundaries, there's no stopping it. It's just total depravity.
And we're seeing it left and right now with transgenderism, even though the major psychological organizations still talk about gender identity disorder. That hasn't stopped activists. That hasn't stopped the media. Some have even said transgender is trendy now. And if you have a moral objection to that, you're hateful and bigoted. And look, you know that there are different states trying to pass laws where, say, if a man identifies as a woman and wants to wear a dress to the daycare center, to work in nursery school or something like that, that's perfectly fine and that you couldn't dismiss that person. That's where things are going. And I've even been criticized by people claiming to be Christians who say, well, that's not right to say that about transgender people. I'm not criticizing people. Mm-hmm. These people have a problem and need help. Instead, we're now going to restructure our entire society. And one question I'd love to ask some gay activists, psychologists, just ask the question, how many genders are there? How many genders? Because there are books that I cite, many of them, in fact, in A Queer Thing Happened to America, that talk about multiple identities and when two genders are not enough. And famous gay activist psychiatrist Jack Drescher recently on record saying, look, there are more than 6 billion people in the world today. Two genders are not enough. Maybe we need 3, 4, 5, 6, wow, 7. Once you get away from male-female foundations, this is what the door is open to. And that's why I felt the need to sound the alarm with this book, not even to prognosticate and talk about what's coming tomorrow, mm-hmm, to make people understand what's already here, just like you did with this issue in your own state.
Yeah, and the fact is that there were there was pedophilia was featured, pederasty, as you've written about in your book. There were, you know, the old homosexual porn novels sometimes involved teenage boys, that youth fantasy. But here it was at the University of Chicago with the books laid out. And it's just bizarre for me, Mike, and it was so heartbreaking to see, 20-year-old kids, I still call them kids, I'm 49, walking in and reading this and knowing that this was all encouraged and even paid for by a university that's supposedly devoted to higher learning. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. But unfortunately, those are the kinds of things that are happening all around us.
And it's hurting people. That's the thing, Mike. It hurts people. I mean, when you create these gateways, you're going to get more of the bad behavior and the destructive behavior that we're talking about.
Right. Not only are these things contrary to God's order, but God's order is for the best of the human race. And when we look, when I was on Tyra Banks last year and the show on so-called transgender children, my position was, wouldn't it be best, couldn't we all agree, that rather than sending a boy to school dressed as a girl, then putting the kid on hormone blockers when he's ready to come into puberty, and then sex mutilating, sex change surgery, and then hormones for life, wouldn't it be better if this kid could be at home with his biological sex from the inside out? I mean, isn't that a better way? And to even suggest that is bigoted and intolerant. That's how twisted things have become.
Well, let's get to some of your other chapters here, Mike. This is very disturbing, folks. Mike Brown, in his book, again, A Queer Thing Happened to America, and you can get it through his website, AskDrBrown.org. You can go to Amazon, get it that way. At Americans for Truth, we've bought a bunch from Mike, and we're selling them for $25. That includes postage. You're also helping out Americans for Truth if you buy them through us, so you can do that off our website.
That's a good deal. They should do that.
Mike, talk about this chapter of queer theology. I was struck, and I think it's evident from your writing that you were struck at how openly some of the leading so-called gay theologians, touted basically a queer Christ, as you write in the book.
Yeah, someone recently accused me of cherry picking, and they said, I know thousands or hundreds of gay and lesbian Christians, and they've never heard of such things, and you just cherry picked. No, it's the opposite. What happened was, I knew some of the famous arguments that try to make Jonathan and David gay, or that say that Jesus and John were in a gay relationship or whatever, or Ruth and Naomi. I mean, whoever it is, you get two people close on any level that are of the same sex. Instead of recognizing a friendship, there must have been a sexual attraction. I knew about some of these arguments, and of course they're ridiculous and they're unbiblical and they can be easily dismissed. But I started to get the literature of gay theologians. I started to search. I mean, I know how to do research, and biblical scholarship is my field of academic training, that, you know, Semitic languages. And so I just started to get the main volumes. I bought the Queer Bible Commentary. I would find out who were the major voices and get their books and which books are praised and recommended, and who's a major speaker at the Metropolitan Community Church, you know, the MCC, the gay denomination, and get their material. And the more I read, you talk about being shocked and grieved. When I finished writing the last words of the chapter, my wife Nancy was in another part of the house. I just went in the room where she was and just broke down crying. It was just so grievous. I got Torah queries. This is by Jewish scholars that are gay or gay ally, writing from a gay perspective on narrative in the five books of Moses and so on. And again, the shock of what was there and the sexual fixation and so much of the material. And I mean,
let me read this. I got one for you that I wanted to read, Mike, on page 343. You've got Robert Goss, who's a former Jesuit priest. And is he now at Harvard, or he got a PhD at Harvard. And he's apparently at the Webster University in St. Louis. I don't know if he's currently there, but here's what you write on page 343. Hold on. He's quoting somebody else. He's quoting Professor Marcella Allhouse Reid of the University of Edinburgh, Scotland. Let's see. And here she writes, a longstanding and committed liberation theologian, Goss offers us a Christology grounded in trans lesbian experience, taking a clear option for those who have been marginalized by the heterosexual ideology that has regrettably perverted Christianity. Now, here's the one I was looking for, Mike. Page 344. Of his own personal experience, Robert Goss writes, Jesus evolved from a friend in childhood to lover and to the queer Christ calling me out of the closet into the streets as an activist priest. And then you say, what does he mean by this? And then you quote him. This is Robert Goss, a gay theologian. He says, quote, I trace my first unspoken words of physical attraction to the crucified Jesus, wanting to strip off his loincloth to gaze at his genitals. As a young prepubescent child, I remember trying to take off the loincloth of a crucified Jesus. As I reached puberty, I gazed erotically at Michelangelo's Risen Christ, a nude sculpture in an art book in the library. I lusted after the figure of Christ, imagining him as the bearded hunk depicted by Michelangelo. Christ was an utterly desirable bearded hunk, and it goes on and goes on. Unbelievable.
You know, I mean, here I cited those words in the book, and the reason that you had the quote from the late Marcella Althaus Reid and some others is because I quote a number of leaders that were scholars and theologians that are all praising Goss's book, where he says these very things, just praising it without reserve. And, you know, I just shocked. Even hearing you read those words, I'm repulsed on the inside hearing them, even though I knew that they were there. And the problem is Goss says that his experience was not unique to him. You say, okay, I know gay Christian men, and that's the last thought in their mind. Okay, well then where are the leaders renouncing this stuff? Why don't the leaders of the MCC, rather than having him speak at their convention, renounce this stuff? I asked Harry Knox with the Human Rights Campaign and subsequently on Obama's Faith Advisory Council, a man who claims to be a practicing homosexual and a born-again Christian at the same time. I asked him three times in our debate in 2008, renounce this stuff. One of the guys who's written trash like this is Ken Stone, Professor Ken Stone. He's part of your Human Rights Council for Religion and Faith and so on. He writes regularly on your website. Renounce this stuff. Three times I asked them to, and they wouldn't.
Okay, Michael, we'll be right back after the break. We'll go on with this.
Are you sick and tired of homosexuality and gay marriage being celebrated by the liberal media and popular culture? Do you worry about the radical gay agenda being pushed on young children in schools? Are you worried that the gay movement will destroy America's religious freedoms? And are you offended that Christians are called bigots and homophobes just because they agree with God that homosexual behavior is wrong? Americans for Truth About Homosexuality is a single-issue group devoted to exposing and fighting the gay agenda. They are not about hate, but love for God's truth. They are Christians, so instead of celebrating homosexuality, they lift up the many ex-gays who have left it behind and now lead godly lives through Christ. But Americans for Truth needs your help. The gay lobby has lots of money, power, and media support, but it lacks truth. Please help keep this show on the air and educate America about the dangerous goals of this anti-Christian movement. Make your tax-deductible gift online today at AmericansForTruth.com. That's AmericansForTruth.com.
Welcome back, everybody. We're talking to Mike Brown, who is a one of the world's leading authorities on Messianic Judaism. He's a scholar. He has written a tremendous book called "A Queer Thing Happened to America." And Mike, we could just go on and on reading these terrible examples. Here's one on page 347, in which the same man, Robert Goss, talks about Easter. He says, "Quote: On Easter, God made Jesus queer in His solidarity with us. In other words, Jesus, quote, came out of the closet and became the queer Christ." Obviously, these guys are trying to rationalize their errant lifestyle by mingling the scripture to somehow celebrate homosexuality. It's rather bizarre.
Yeah, it's bizarre. It's pathetic. It's unfortunate. You have many that really want to please the Lord on a certain level that have struggled with their sexual attractions, that didn't change and that completely rejected God. Then you have others who struggle with their sexual orientations and concluded, well, God must have made me like this. And people say, Paul didn't really, you think Paul talked about homosexuality? No, he didn't mean committed monogamous relationships. And see, Jesus never mentioned, and look at Jonathan and David, and suddenly you start to read scriptures through completely new eyes. It must be very liberating on the flesh for these people to say, oh, so I can have I can have this relationship with this man that I love, and I can be with him, and God's pleased with it, and he's going to bless this. And again, aside from being a complete misreading of Scripture and bringing themselves under condemnation, they think it's liberation, it's really condemnation. Even more tragically, the Bible now gets rewritten. And I actually preached a message at a church in Orlando a couple Sundays ago, on Resurrection Sunday, Easter Sunday, and it was called "The Resurrection of Jesus and Gay Liberation." And I read that very quote from Robert Goss, and I explained, look, Jesus did not become a serial killer. Jesus did not become a Satan worshiper. Mm-hmm. Jesus did not become a pedophile. Jesus did not become, a rapist. Jesus didn't actually become a sinner for us. He took on the penalty of our sin. He carried our sins so that by dying for our sins, we could now be set free and live a new life. So the queer liberation that Jesus brings is not by telling someone, go on and live that gay lifestyle. Go on and have that sexual and romantic relationship with someone of your own sex, because that's how I made you. No, to the contrary, he takes our brokenness, our sin, our fallenness on his own shoulders, pays the penalty, and then rises in new life so we also could live a new life. Tragically, you start reading the Bible through this gay lens. Peter, I was shocked. And again, I don't mean that every interpretation of every passage in these commentaries in these books is that perverse, but these are absolutely there. And I got book after book after book. I looked at ones that were recommended. I looked at ones that were well-known and well-known voices, and to my pain and shock, found sexual encounter after sexual encounter written into the Scripture. One Old Testament scholar talked about cruising the Scriptures. He's going to look through the Scriptures with his gaydar to try to spot gay characters that others didn't see. And,
bizarre.
You've got an account of an Israelite guy, and he pulls a knife, a long knife, out to kill somebody. He didn't really pull a long knife out. No, it's reference to his private,
yeah,
violates somebody.
I remember reading one that that John the Baptist was a leather man. I remember reading some guy from the American Academy of Religion who was speaking there. You brought up Harry Knox. Harry Knox, I remember when he debated Matt Barber on one of the cable channels, and he said that his homosexuality was a gift from God. So he completely inverted. And how dare I? He said, "I can't return the gift that God gave me." So, I mean, what a perverted twisting of truth is that? Completely flips it on its head.
Yeah, and I asked Harry that question. I quoted those very words of his, that it was a gift from God, and he would not dare throw that back at the Creator. So I asked him a couple of questions. I said, all right, so for the person that's transgender, why are they now having sex change surgery? I mean, isn't their body a gift from God, the way He crafted us and made us? Why are you going out and mutilating the gift that He gave you if it's really a gift from God? And then I said, you know, what about the fact that two gay men, if they're going to, quote, have a child, you know, it's all this incredible amount of money and expense and in vitro fertilization of some other woman, and then, you know, the mother's milk for the kid and this whole process, and sometimes it's hit and miss, and it can be years, and it's hundreds of thousands of dollars. I said, how is that a gift? Well, you know, if someone said, look, I recognize something's wrong, I just don't know my way out, man, we'll lay our lives down for people like that. But when someone now wants to turn the Bible on its head, read perversion into it, and use that to justify immorality, we have to draw the line and say that's very wrong, and we will sound the alarm.
Yeah, and you know, I just get the feeling from reading the chapter on the queer Christ and the that most people would not, the average person would have no clue that there's all this bizarre theology out there. And so it's, you know, I get the feeling that if more people saw it, they would be shocked. And yet, now the media, of course, is almost agnostic on faith. And so they're not going to really, you know, the media will treat everybody like they're a Christian, regardless of whether they have a homosexual in front of their name, transgender, it doesn't matter. The media is agnostic. So how do we respond to these lies?
Well, what we have to do is educate in-house. What we have to do is get other believers to understand what the stakes are, to show them the trajectory of, quote, gay Christianity. And then we have to challenge those that may be caught in deception, that say that they are practicing homosexual and practicing Christian at the same time, and say, look at where this goes. You get Jesus healing the centurion servant. Now he's smiling on a man-boy relationship and saying, hey, you know, go on having your fun, go on having sex. Whereas he tells the woman caught in adultery, go and sin no more. Allegedly with this one, he heals the gay teen lover, the boy toy, so he and the centurion can go on having sex. You have to see that is absolutely perverted. And you're turning the Bible on its head. And you know, those that just want to have kind of the soft, friendly approach that never confronts issues, is this what you want to defend? Is this the stuff that you want to stand for?
The weakness of their position, and I'm talking about people like Andy Marin, and even though I believe in many respects they intend well, they have good intentions, but they fail to take heed of the activism. They don't factor in the activism, Mike. You know, you said the average Joe doesn't believe all this stuff. Well, it's in the same way you have a lot of gay guys who say, look, I don't want to take away your freedom. You have the freedom to do what you want. But the leadership, and I want to get to that next in your book, the leadership of the movement is actually very seriously interested in repressing the freedom of people to live out their opposition to homosexuality, whether it's a matter of faith or just their conscience.
All right, and let's look at something else. Because of gay activism in schools, kids are being exposed to stuff while they still don't even understand the concept of sexuality, what it is. They're being taught about gay and lesbian and bisexual, transgender and genderqueer and things like this. They're having a lot of information given to them that's going to bring further confusion. Don't we care about those kids? Don't we care about what's going to happen to them as they grow up? Don't we care about the fact that in our middle schools now in America that there are gay straight alliances where, say, a 12 or 13-year-old kid can decide that he's gay or she's lesbian and come out to peers and even faculty advisors without the parents even knowing about this? You know, doesn't that concern us? Doesn't it concern us that gay activism, when it comes in conflict with religious freedoms, is consistently winning battles against religious freedoms to the point that Kai Feldblum famously said, and she's now on our president's Equal Opportunities Commission, a lesbian woman, a law professor at Georgetown. She famously said that when there's a conflict between sexual liberties and religious liberties, she can't see religious liberties winning anywhere. Don't these things concern those evangelicals that just want to use the soft, gentle approach? Don't they realize that on our watch, a whole generation is being massively influenced to their own destruction? Shouldn't that concern them?
No, it should, of course, Mike. Now, we've got about 3 minutes left in this segment, then one more shorter one. Talk about the movement to repress the right of homosexuals, people who want to overcome their homosexual desires, how the gay activist movement is fighting that and jeopardizes the fact that they might not even have an opportunity to get help because of the activism. Talk about that, chapter 12.
I have a whole chapter in the book on the ex-gay movement, fact or fiction, and I address the question, can someone actually change? And you see, if a person can change, if they can legitimately go from homosexual to heterosexual, then that means it is not innate and immutable. That means it can't be compared to skin color. That means that the whole civil rights argument is undermined right there. And I know that there are many gay men and women that struggled and tried to change, and they were suicidal over it, and they weren't able. I tell them, okay, I believe your story, but you have to believe the stories of those who have changed. And some friends of ours put out a video a couple months back, just a testimony of someone in their midst who has changed, and it was called From Homosexuality to Holiness. They were shocked. They called and said, what in the world is going on? We're getting death threats since this video came out. We've never gotten abusive stuff like this with any testimony we ever put out. And there is an activist move so that therapists and counselors, if you come to them and say, I'm troubled with my same-sex attraction, I really want to try to become heterosexual, it's in conformity with my moral beliefs or my family values, my religious beliefs, would you help me? There is gay activist pressure to make it illegal for a therapist to help someone with unwanted same-sex attraction. And there's a case in England right now where a licensed counselor is about to lose her license because she offered help to someone who said, I want help. It turns out that it was a gay activist just bugging things and recording everything to expose her. She could lose her license by offering help to someone who said they wanted help. Gay activists do not want there to be another side to the story, and the gay activists rage when it comes to ex-gay issues.
And how can you have a civil rights movement that is bent on taking away the rights of people to disagree?
Absolutely. It is utterly intolerant in the name of tolerance.
We're talking with Mike Brown, who's written an excellent book here. And Mike, this is, you just got so much, we're not going to be able to get through it all. But I do want you to talk about just this, you know, the cases that we already see. You know, we've here in America, we've got two students at least who their attempt to get education to be counselors is jeopardized because they do not want to be forced to approve of homosexual relationships. So the book is A Queer Thing Happened to America. It's by Mike Brown. His website is askdrbrown.org, and ours is americansfortruth.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We're in our final segment of part three of our four-part interview with a fascinating guest, Dr. Michael Brown. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience based in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's one of these guys who has who's doing so many things, you can't really keep up with them all. But the website is askdrbrown.org. The book website is aqueerthing.com. But you can order it through Americans for Truth for just $25, which I think is probably cheaper than where you would get it on Amazon.com. That's postpay, $25. You can do that through americansfortruth.org and go to the donate page. Mike, we've only got 8.5 minutes here. Talk about your chapter, Big Brother. This is chapter 14 of the book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. Big Brother is watching, and he really is gay.
Yeah, you know, the scary thing about that chapter, it's a pretty substantial chapter. The book as a whole, including endnotes, is just under 700 pages. I could have written a book of over 700 pages just on the subject matter there about the loss of religious freedoms, freedoms of conscience to gay activism. Glaring examples. I give details about what's happened in England, details about what's happened in Canada, details about what's happening in Australia, but I focus on America to say, here's what has already happened in America. You mentioned a counseling-related case. So Julia Ward, she's a mature black American woman. She's in grad school for counseling. Part of the program requires that you actually do hands-on counseling. She's given a client to counsel. This person's in a homosexual relationship. She's told that she needs to affirm the homosexual relationship. She tells her professor, well, I can't do that in good conscience as a Christian. I'm happy to counsel the patient, but I can't affirm homosexual relationship. What should I do? The professor says, oh, just give the case over to someone else, and they'll counsel that person. Well, that's not where it ended. it ended with a tribunal that she was called to, basically like an inquisition, where they challenged her religious beliefs, mocked her religious beliefs. Now, she's a solid Christian woman. She was able to handle this. But as a result of her not being willing to renounce her Christian beliefs and have freedom of conscience in terms of not affirming homosexual practice, she was kicked out of the program, kicked out of the school. And thus far, it's held up in the courts. You have the famous case of Crystal Dixon, another African-American woman. And I mention this because you'd think that this would be someone we'd be slow to discriminate against, that we'd be very concerned about this person's rights and how it appears.
Yeah, you'd think the gay activists
contest with gay rights. So
Mike, excuse me. You'd think at least strategically they'd say, well, let's lay off the African-Americans for now.
Yeah,
but
an
no.
African-American woman on top of it, right? No, not here. And I don't mean that you don't have people listening right now. It says, you got no idea what I went through growing up, you know, gay and get beat up. And I'm not minimizing what other people have gone through. I'm just saying if there's injustice, don't put it on other people. If you yourself were a victim of oppression, don't become the oppressor. If you yourself were a victim of intolerance, don't go be intolerant to someone else. But sadly, that's what's happened here. And Crystal Dixon was an administrator, associate vice president of human resources, I think was her position at the University of Toledo in Ohio. A local editor in her local newspaper wrote about how he understands that sexuality, sexual orientation is just like skin color, it's just like having a physical handicap, therefore he should support gay rights. So she, on her own time, and as a private citizen, not on behalf of the university, simply wrote an editorial saying that as a black woman, she differed because she can't change her skin color, but there are people who leave homosexuality. And also, per capita, your average gay or lesbian person earns more than your average African-American, so on. Even if you disputed her statistics, even if you argued with that people can change, that's immaterial. She simply wrote an editorial. She was fired from the university for writing the editorial. And the president of the university stood with a group called Spectrum, gay activist group, you know, multi-gender, multi-sexual orientation, that's all good. The president made clear that's what we support, that's what we stand for. And Crystal Dixon's freedom of speech was actually completely scorned to the point she was fired from a university job. I mean, it's unimaginable, and yet it's happened, and she has still not been reinstated. Case after case after case,
Mike,
in America, around the world.
And Mike, it seems that the media is still on the old talking points of the homosexuals being the victims. They can't get off that. There's a growing number of victims, mostly Christians, but some people, I guess, who are not Christians, they just are morally opposed to homosexual behavior. The media is not really picking up on that, so there's not much accountability. These activists are not being held accountable for oppressing people in the name of tolerance. It's incredible.
It is. And again, I'm all for justice for all. If there's a case of someone being mistreated, you had the case recently of what we thought was a woman being beaten up in a McDonald's, using a bathroom and getting beaten up, white woman by two black women. Then it turns out that it's actually not a woman. It's a man who dresses as a woman. And now this is, the cause for transgender activism. What I say to that is, look, under no circumstances do you beat someone up or do you attack them because of the way they look, or if a man wears a dress, it's his problem, but you don't beat the person up, God forbid. At the same time, this is now the cause celeb for transgender activism. So what we should do is say to a man who dresses as a woman, by all means, come into our bathroom. That's just fine. We're ladies. Welcome to our bathroom. So the whole victim status, it just gets played out.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Martin Luther King has much in common with a guy who wants to go into a female restroom wearing a dress, a big-boned guy with Adam's apple using the female restroom. The fact is, it's women do not want men, whether they're in dresses or not, in their restroom.
Right. So the beating up of the person is abhorrent and repulsive and absolutely wrong. And it's shocking that the McDonald's people didn't immediately step in and stop the whole thing. And the people that attacked should be punished by the law. But to now make it into a hate crime and a transgender issue, and we need better protections for transgenders and they need to be able to use the bathrooms, that's the opposite conclusion to draw from this. The right conclusion is We need to stop this violence and attack, and we need to help these people rather than have a man go into a lady's bathroom wearing a dress.
Right.
But
well, Mike, on the same
trust that you're talking about. That,
on the same token, the schools. You know, if there's a kid being harmed, our hearts go out to the kid. We are against bullying of any kind for any reason. But on the other hand, to use those unfortunate incidents to promote homosexuality and gender confusion in the classroom to impressionable kids, as you said, some of them don't even know what sex is yet, is incredible. You got a minute and a half here to comment on this quote, and then we'll end it, Mike. Kevin Jennings, the founder of the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, said in 2004, ex-gay messages have no place in our nation's public schools. A line has been drawn. There is no other side when you're talking about lesbian, gay, and bisexual students.
Yeah, gay activism will not harbor another side to the story. The only solution is capitulation. And basically, in a word, we will, and this is the gay activist approach, whether they say it like this or not, we will intimidate and we will manipulate until you capitulate. And I've told Christian leaders, it's speak now or forever hold your peace. It's speak now or apologize to your kids and grandkids. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said the ultimate test of a moral society is the kind of world that it leaves to its children. We need to expose the intolerance. We need to expose the bigotry. We need to expose the hatred. Let's maintain our composure and do it with grace. And I believe soon enough, society will recognize where the oppressive intolerance is coming from and will begin to rise up against it.
Even if the media doesn't cover it, some things are starting to reach out and touch average people when they see these things happening.
Absolutely. And America always sides with the underdog, tends to side with the underdog, and tends to side with the one that's oppressed. And the tables are turning in such dramatic fashion that the sentiments are soon going to be against the oppressors. And the oppressors, the intolerant ones, are going to be found to be many of the gay activists fighting for tolerance.
Absolutely. And just for the record, in that Crystal Dixon case, she got a job in Michigan, and the gay activist started a web campaign to get her fired or not hired at her new job in Michigan. That's an African-American, Crystal Dixon. We'll be back next week with Mike Brown. Wonderful book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. You can buy it for $25 off our website, AmericansForTruth.org.
This was the Americans for Truth Hour with your host, Peter LaBarbera. Tune in Saturdays at 11 p.m. to hear compelling interviews with everyday heroes on the front lines of the culture war. People who put faith and truth above the lies of political correctness. Stay informed and engaged on the issues of life, marriage, and the God-ordained family. Please stand with them as they work to make America, in the words of President Ronald Reagan, a shining city on the hill. And once again, one nation under God. The Americans for Truth Hour, Saturdays at 11 p.m. on AM 1160.